I've got a warehouse at a 3PL. It's full of stock. Can you integrate into that warehouse? And my answer is, well, actually, technically, yes, we can set up an API integration. We can pull the data in. We can create some reports. We can do some visualization. That's not a problem. But it's not going to help you drive more sales, because the issue is you've got no inventory on Amazon. So actually, while you've got lots of product over there, you haven't synced that product. You haven't told Amazon. And sometimes this is not delivered. Sometimes it's just a data feed that's broken.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. While free tools such as Google Analytics and Google Search Console can help you provide some insights into your funnel and customer behavior, you are simply scratching the surface with the amount of analytics you would need to drive marketing results. With multiple systems being used in the e-commerce architecture, including CRM, website, PIM, and marketplaces, you need a centralized analytics platform to determine which products are the right fit for which channel, which marketplaces are most profitable in which countries, which paid campaigns are working most effectively for which customer segment, where would be your next expansion opportunity. Would it make more sense to extend another product line on a specific channel, or does it make more sense to expand geographically? How can you find Customer 360 to get all the activities related to a customer? These are the questions you'll have as an e-commerce manager, for which you need tons of data to make informed decisions. In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn who brings significant expertise to discuss marketing analytics strategies for e-commerce. We covered many grounds in this episode, including several stories where the analytics platform consisted of several systems and platforms and the challenges associated with multi-system architecture. Finally, we covered how to interpret and read the data, find the right datasets for reconciliations, and what KPIs and dashboards marketers need for their day jobs. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. Now, for today's topic, we are going to be talking about analytics. Now, when you think of the analytics, it could mean a lot of different things. Okay. In our case, and this is going to be for the panelists as well, just to set the stage for the topic, we are talking about the consolidated platform that is going to help us in making decisions. In any e-commerce environment, in the architecture, you are probably going to have multiple systems. You are going to have, let's say, your website. How many other websites you have, you might have multiple. You are probably going to have multiple, you know, if you are using a marketing automation tool, HubSpot, you are probably going to have multiple HubSpots. You might be talking to a lot of different marketplaces. They are going to bring their own insights. Then you are going to have many different platforms. And if you are utilizing external data, then more data you are going to have. And then finally, you are going to have some of the internal data from the ERP, if you care for that. Now, we are going to be starting with the intros first of the panelists, and then we are going to move with the questions. So I am going to start with Eric. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Sam. I'm Eric Landman. I'm the e-commerce division manager for Earthly Interactive. We are an agency that builds e-com sites and web apps for quite a variety of customers. Personally, I'm a developer. I'm a Magento certified solution specialist, and I've built out about sites mostly in Magento, but also in Shopify and WooCommerce and older code bases. So I bring a developer perspective to these talks.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Eric. Paul, can I move to you next for your introduction?
Hi, Sam. Great to be here. My name is Paul Sonneveld, and I'm the founder of Merchant Spring. MerchantSpring is a global analytics management and reporting platform specifically for marketplaces. So what we allow both sophisticated marketplace sellers to do, as well as marketplace agencies and aggregators, allow them to report on their entire portfolio of channels, seeing them all in one dashboard, and really shining a spotlight on, you know, where are the opportunities to improve performance, whether it be sales, profit, advertising, or operational aspects of the operation.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, for Paul, for that intro. Kira, can I move to you next for your intro, if you don't mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Delighted to be the only woman here on the panel. Yay.
We were trying to have two. we had the sixth panelist, but only one showed up.
Try harder. So, thanks for having me. So I am Kira. I'm actually the marketing person who moved into business technology. So now I help small and medium businesses, together with my team, implement business technologies, specifically Zoho for small and medium businesses and Microsoft Dynamics for larger corporate businesses. And that's where marketing investment really connects with the business results.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Kira. Dave, can I move to you next for your intro?
Of course. Hey, everybody. Dave Meyer, the founder and president of BusyWeb. And BusyWeb is a growth marketing agency based out of Minneapolis. We help manufacturers in particular to find leads, to convert those leads, and to grow smart by using systems, processes, and tools. So super excited to be here. In addition to running and owning BusyWeb, which is a team of about 22 now, I'm also a speaker and trainer for Google, and one of the big things that I talk and train about all the time is analytics and how to use the data that you gather to make good business decisions. So this is going to be a fantastic conversation. Thanks, Sam.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave, for being here. And now, as you guys know, I am a big fan of stories. So what I want you guys to pick is going to be one story related to the centralized analytics platform that you have seen in a specific business. So what I want you guys to talk about is different systems that were used in the architecture. Obviously, if this is going to be, let's say, the standalone tools, for example, your Google Search Console or Google Analytics, obviously they are great. HubSpot is going to be great. They all provide the analytics. But for the purposes of this conversation, we are looking for the central analytics that marketing team is going to need to be able to make the informed decisions. Some of these decisions are going to be technical, and some of them are going to be strategic. So, Paul, I'm actually going to start with you, if you don't mind. So the story that I am looking for is a business that you have seen. How many different systems did they have? What was the central analytics platform that they were using? And what was the need for the central analytics? What kind of business use cases they were able to solve using the central platform just because of that centralized architecture?
Yeah, sure. That's a really great question. And you know, we have lots of client stories on a weekly basis, but what I really want to talk to you about is our own story, you know, MerchantSpring, because I think, you know, we didn't start out to be a software business. We actually started out to be an agency business, a marketplace agency. And for those people not familiar in that space, really what a marketplace agency does is provides outsourced e-commerce services to do the full management of your clients' marketplace accounts and sometimes e-commerce accounts like, you know, Shopify or Magento stores as well. It's a fairly new concept. We started at 5 years here in Australia. Certainly Australia was quite new. And Australia was different in many parts of the world in that people were trading on lots of different marketplaces. So it wasn't just, you know, Amazon and Shopify. It was Amazon, eBay, and three or four local ones. So that created enormous complexity and pain for customers, and hence a great opportunity for us to start a business and to help customers with that. However, we had great success in the first year, and we very quickly were managing 50 different client accounts across three or four marketplaces each. But we had very few systems. And at that time, you know, there are great Amazon tools and there are a couple of eBay tools, you know, and some of the domestic marketplaces didn't have any tools at all. And really what that, the issue that it created for us is we really found it very hard and difficult to get a handle on what is going on at any point in time. And even say from an account manager point of view, my team, you know, today, where should they be spending their time? You know, if they have an hour, how should they spend that hour in order to drive more sales? You know, which channel, which SKUs, and the like. On top of that, as some of you know, some of these marketplaces have very stringent conditions. It's not just about sales. They want you to maintain a really strong customer scorecard, or it's what I call seller health. You need to be really strong operationally. You need to balance all these things. And it was very common, certainly the early days. You know, I ended up getting the worst phone call ever. It was Boxing Day, I think 2017, and a client rang me up and said, Paul, you know, he used a few profanities in his language. Paul, what is going on? My Amazon account has been suspended. All right. And that was a great example of deep pain in terms of, because we didn't see it coming. We didn't have the monitoring in place. We didn't have the piece in place to put the early alerts, and we weren't proactive in managing it. So that was really our bad and a very hard and painful lesson. But from that point, we said, look, we've got all these separate tools, but what we really need is we need one platform that allows us to connect all of our accounts and to be able to see in real time what's happening in terms of sales, what's happening in profit, what's happening in operations. We need to see that end-to-end perspective so that, A, we save ourselves a whole lot of admin time, because I've at that time employed a team of about 5 people in Manila just to check things, write things down in Google Sheets, make sure that everything was all right. But we could never sort of get there. So we needed to have more timely information. We needed to have a good indicator of where to focus. And we need to be able to see everything at once so we know of the 50 clients where we're going to spend our time today. You know, which clients are literally, you know, on fire, and we need to put that fire out pretty quickly. So that was really some of the real pain points. And we looked very closely around the market. We couldn't find the tool that we looked, that we're looking for. And we end up building, building Merchant Sprint specifically for that need to build that centralized platform to provide us with real-time insights. And not just to cut out hours and hours of manual time, but really to improve the service that we're offering to our clients as well. So that's probably the most compelling story for us, because that sort of gave birth to who we are today.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Paul, for that. So I am actually going to move to Eric. Eric, if you don't mind. So the story that I am looking for, as you guys know, the primary listeners that we have are going to be slightly more product-centric companies, and that is going to be the manufacturer. So the most relatable stories for them is going to be, if you guys can talk about some of the manufacturers, what they have done. The other point that you mentioned, Paul, is going to be providing the end-to-end perspective. Now, that end-to-end perspective sometimes could be subjective, even though it might not come across as subjective. So here, in this specific case, we are talking about end-to-end perspective from the marketing perspective. Okay? Because we are only talking about the marketing tools here. So let's just focus on that for now. We are looking for just the needs of the marketing team and what we can do for the marketing. So Eric, do you have any specific story of a specific business in which how many different tools were there? What was their central analytics platform that made the specific decisions for marketing? We are not talking about the business strategy decisions, but some of the decisions such as channels, the effectiveness of channels, effectiveness of your product on a specific channel, they still belong to marketing. They are not really operational or financial disease. So Eric, do you want to talk about your story?
Sure. I can give you an insight on one of my customers. They are an international bicycle manufacturer. They participate in 4 or 5 stores running in Europe now, several in South America, New Zealand, so all over the place. They have around 30 websites and business B2B sort of sites that were a bit chaotic, because they're built on a bunch of different platforms. Some are written in an old Java platform. Some are written in Hybris, which is this crazy expensive B2B system. And they're trying to bring all this data together. They're a Microsoft shop now. All of their sites are hosted in Acquia. And I don't have too much visibility into the marketing team, but I do know how they collect their data and how they represent it. So what they're using now is the application I've seen is that the manager of software delivery, who's in charge of managing all of these websites, by the way, she's got 5 development teams scattered around the world. So it's, you know, it's an enterprise. She is able to use this really cool dashboard to look at. Now, I'm going to describe these things that are really development tasks, but the same sort of data can be looked at from product and sales. So it's kind of like conceptually how this is displayed. She can see the number of issues filed across the board or per business unit, or even per business unit, like, okay, how many how many tasks does Germany have in the next 3 months? How much development resources am I going to need? So this is development, but it could easily be products or materials that are needed. She can see the ticket aging over time, like which ones are moving, which ones aren't moving, and the different time in different stages of development. So this is directly translatable into manufacturing. They do use the same system for manufacturing, and she's talked about how they have such an unbelievable backlog for orders. The whole outdoor industry is backed up incredibly, like 6 months to a year for some things. So this allows them to sort of project as much as they can because of the supply chain disruptions on what they may have, what stock they may have when the containers are coming back from China and New Zealand and their other manufacturers, and some are in the US. And also they can anticipate the resource needs too for this particular application. Now the platform they're using is Microsoft Dynamics. It's built on Microsoft Dynamics, and it's completely interactive. So you can change sliders and change timelines and things like that. It's really incredible. I have no idea what it costs. I'm sure it's expensive.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Eric, for that. Dave, I'm actually going to move to you for your story next. What is your story that you might be able to share related to different systems? And what kind of business decisions, especially from marketing perspective, again, when I'm talking about business, it could mean a lot of different things. Right. Let's focus on marketing. How can we enable marketers to make better decisions through analytics architecture?
Sure. And I think the thing that I come back to, and I think I've said this a few times on these events, Sam, is if you're not measuring, you're not marketing.
Yeah.
And too often, especially in manufacturing, businesses tend to default into just doing things and hoping for the best.
Yep.
And so we especially business owners, and when you're looking at, you know, small to mid manufacturers, kind of in that $50-100 million range, they tend to do a lot of gut checking. They're like, well, we know that our audience is X, or we know that our audience is Y. You'd be very surprised, and our clients have been very surprised once we really started looking at the data, that their audience was either tending to skew younger or older, or more women or more men than we thought. And so we had to adjust our messaging in order to better reach the right people. If you're figuring that you're mostly reaching line level folks that are new in their careers and are making very specific decisions, then you're going to have a much different data set and a much different outreach strategy than you would if you were going for tenured executives that are mostly interested in the bottom line and systems, right? So I'll go all the way back to a super silly experience that we had with a client. We had a brand new client that we were working with, and they were really, really sold on advertising to or via a radio station. So they were doing radio ads, spots for their manufacturing business. And it was a brilliant offer that they had received from this station. It was the top rated morning show in the country, in the US. And they were like, we're going to get lots of leads out of this. We're going to get tons of stuff in it. We're going to throw, let's just start small. We're going to give it, you know, $5,000 a week that we want to do. And so they were advertising like crazy, they thought. And the marketing rep at the radio station said, we guarantee we're going to get you, you know, 500 leads a month. We crunched the numbers after the first 2 months. We gave them a month's worth of grace period. We crunched the numbers, and they were getting more like five instead of 500. So we took that back to the radio station and we said, you know what, we really need you to do more, or we need to change this, or we need to cancel it. And so we completely reconfigured the scope of those ads. We changed the call to action on that ad to go to an easier page and to make the request lower, to lower the bar so that people would actually take some sort of an action. That made the end result 10 times more powerful, actually in more in the line of what they were promised in the first place. And if we wouldn't have measured it, we would never have known. So having the information, having the data, and making sure that you're actually getting not just impressions, but actual actions is incredibly important. And of course, there's lots of ways to do that through all of the different systems. We like to use HubSpot kind of as our all-encompassing measurement tool because it takes all kinds of different inputs and analytics, and it can integrate with all kinds of different systems and business measurement tools all the way through the entire buyer's journey. But as we go through it, it's important to not only look at the numbers to verify that you're getting the results, but also to really gut check, are you reaching the right people?
Yeah, amazing story there. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. So Kira, I'm actually going to move to you. So in Dave's story, obviously, when you have just one channel and you have very simplified data, very simplified persona, it's very easy to measure. Now let's talk about when we are talking about 1500 channels. We are marketing to 1500 channels, and now we need to compare which ones are working and which ones are not working, which ones are overselling, which ones are underselling, so that we can really pay attention to the ones that are really working. So if that is going to be the case, how would you approach this, or in terms of the story that you were going to share? So describe a story in terms of different systems that were going to be used in case of your marketing department. So talk about the architecture and the business decisions that this specific business has made because of that architecture or the systems that they had.
Yeah, sure. So let me first give you, I think, a simple yet appropriate story.
Okay.
And
okay.
This would be about the client whom I'm working on the marketing side right now. So this is, I guess, very typical. A brick and mortar business is evolving into e-commerce online. So with regards to the systems they are using and not going to replace, they have their ERP or operational system that serves both brick and mortar business, which is like multidimensional. It has equipment and parts.
Yeah.
And it also serves the e-commerce business. CRM, obviously. Then call center, which is like not really tracked, but somehow can be tracked via a separate e-commerce platform that they have implemented. Thanks God, it's well integrated with their ERP and their shipping solution.
Yeah.
And of course, they're using multiple marketing channels, but main channels would be Google paid ads and Facebook and YouTube marketing. So like all this, when we're looking at this, and they have only one marketer who is kind of in the coaching stage, he knows business really well, but he's not a marketer by nature. So when we looked at all this, what basically we have done is we have worked with the data, first of all, to see, to map out what we have. And it turns out that there is definitely discrepancy between what Google Analytics, which was set up well, was tracking, versus even their e-commerce system, for the simple reason that actually, the system, the e-commerce system, tracks which orders have been declined or
yeah.
canceled, whatever. And Google Analytics just doesn't have any way to track that. So
right.
where we landed right now, like based on their capacity, desire, and they're an amazing client. They're like, good enough is good enough. We don't need to strive for excellence. So where we landed was adjusting Google Analytics e-commerce tracking to real life results because there were like unexplained drops in the funnel. So we made sure Google Analytics e-commerce tracks the right pages so that they can track the whole funnel well. And then also we just applied a specific percentage of discrepancy that happens between Google Analytics tracking and their e-commerce system tracking. And we said that's good enough. So for marketing purposes, actually just fine-tuning Google Analytics, but doing that really properly, and maybe even going to some experts, because there are experts just in Google Analytics, is really good enough for not so large companies with limited marketing resources. So like define what is that you need to see in your analytics and reporting, what decisions you want to make based on that, and then focus on constructing that data only. So that's my story, and I hope it helps.
No, I completely agree. I think in case of your Google Analytics, I mean, the data is going to be off at times, and you definitely need to make your adjustments to be able to make these correlations from my experience as well. I have seen, you know, different systems providing different analytics, and sometimes it could get very confusing in terms of how to correlate that. So the next question I am going to have for all of you, in sort of creating the centralized system that we are trying to create by correlating the analytics in different systems, because we need one source of truth for our analytics. And again, we are not getting into any of the operational or the financial analytics. We are limiting ourselves to marketing analytics, but even in case of marketing, we are going to have multiple sources that are going to provide very different intel. So Paul, I'm actually going to come back to you again. So what are your thoughts so far in terms of the comments that have been provided by the panelists, and what would be your approach, let's say, when you are trying to correlate these different systems and trying to find that central insight that you can really use to make the appropriate marketing decisions, as well as the actions that you have to take any of those based on your funnel architecture or whatever you want to call this.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, look, so the first thing I'd say is, you know, some of these stories really resonate, particularly, you know, Kara's story around Google Analytics. I mean, certainly internally as a business, we have spent hours and hours trying to get it close, you know, get Google Analytics close to what your internal site, what your billing system is reporting versus what Google Ads is reporting. And sometimes Google Ads and Google Analytics don't even agree, right? But, you know, there's so much value. I mean, if you don't have the confidence that what you're seeing is at least directionally accurate, it's really hard to run a business. So, you know, I fully agree. It's definitely worth investing time to get that right. And you know, we have done that. In terms of, you know, how you are looking, you know, and how you make trade-offs and decisions, I mean, we have taken on a particular philosophy on this front, which is, you know, we connect to different marketplaces. And at the end of the day, we empower our users to grow their sales on those marketplaces. So what that has meant very explicitly is we assume whatever the marketplace sees, whatever, say, an Amazon or an eBay sees, that is the source of truth, which isn't always the case. But what it helps is it focuses on it helps you focus on actions that you need to take. So what do I mean by that? A very typical, I mean, this is not necessarily market related, but a very typical question I get all the time is that, Paul, can you also integrate, you know, yes, I've run out of stock. I can see my out of stock isn't great on Amazon, but I've got a warehouse at a 3PL. It's full of stock. Can you integrate into that warehouse? And my answer is, well, actually, technically, yes, we can set up an API integration. We can pull the data in. We can create some reports. We can do some visualization. That's not a problem. But it's not going to help you drive more sales, because the issue is you've got no inventory on Amazon. So actually, while you've got lots of product over there, you haven't synced that product. You haven't told Amazon, and sometimes this is not deliberate. Sometimes it's just a data feed that's broken, right? Your Amazon doesn't know about it, and therefore your customers can't see your product pages because they're offline. So it's very sort of simple things like that. So our philosophy in terms of what source of truth do we kind of champion, it's always, we always side with what the marketplace sees, because that for us is the strongest correlation with, you know, your direct sales numbers on that.
Okay, amazing. So I'm actually going to have a follow-up question for you, Paul. So obviously, you know, the marketplace data is going to be the source of truth, because probably, you know, you are giving them a lot of business and they want to make sure that they are really helping you. They want to probably create some sort of joint planning later on once you grow enough. I don't know if marketplaces are there yet overall, but in the distribution space, they do a lot of joint planning to help their channel partners. So here, let's say, and I don't know if you have come across any of these scenarios of where the same customers are actually going to different marketplaces, and because of that, you are going to have a lot of you know, the duplication in the data. Have you come across any of those scenarios where you have the same data point coming from different marketplaces and you have hard time tracking, you know, who to trust and how to correlate this information, and you don't want to be double counting? So I don't know, you know, what approach typically you take in terms of correlating the data points from the different systems. Are you always looking for, let's say, I don't know, is it going to be a credit card information? Is it going to be session IDs? How do you correlate the information across different marketplaces and create that central source of truth for your specific prospect or the customer?
Yeah, sure. Look, and there's a few different answers to that. First of all, I'd say the scenario is actually really, really common, right? So you know, our average marketplace seller is trading across 9 or 10 different marketplaces, half of them Amazon, half of them others. You know, our large agency customers, you know, manage up to sort of 400, 500 Amazon accounts. So we always have to deal with these, you know, managing multiple marketplaces. But certainly from a seller point of view, it's not uncommon. You know, very common scenario right now is that, so if you're a manufacturer of products and you sell them on Amazon and other marketplaces, you might have a set of 50 products and you sell those across all marketplaces. So really, there are two questions that are really important here. The first one is you want to be able to understand, you know, relative performance between marketplaces so you can make trade-off decisions.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be able to say, right, this particular SKU, you know, what is my average price realization across these channels? How much am I spending on marketing across each? And ultimately, what is my, you know, cash profit for these products, you know, and my, you know, return on capital? You know, that's because at the end of the day, working capital can only, you know, it only exists once. Inventory, you know, you have to decide specifically now in the world that we live in. Now, how do you deploy the inventory that you can get your hands on? How do you deploy it to the right channel to drive the right ROI? So that's, you know, that becomes really, really critical. In terms of actually reconciling and, you know, what's the source of truth, we actually go down to the reconciliation that each of the marketplaces provide back to their customers. So at the end of the day, the marketplace on a fortnightly basis will take a pile of cash and deposit it in your bank account and say, Sam, after you've sold all these products and subtracted all these fees and, you know, commission fees, marketing fees, warehousing fees, here's what's left over. And this is what physically ends up in your bank account. That's the number we try and reconcile to, so that we give that confidence that everything else they see above that has some bearing directly in terms of what they see coming into their bank account.
Okay, amazing insights there. Thank you so much, Paul, for that. So, Eric, I'm actually going to move to you next. You know, so based on the comments that have been offered so far, I don't know if you are going to have any sort of agreements, disagreements, but overall, have you seen any challenges in correlating data across different marketing systems? And I am being very specific here that, you know, we are talking about just the marketing systems. We are not talking about other underlying systems. Obviously, we are going to have far more challenges when we are talking about, you know, combining financial system or the operations. It's a different beast. Okay, let's talk about just marketing right now. So have you seen any challenges in correlating marketing data in the marketing analytics layer?
Well, that would be typically handled by the marketing people that I set the systems up for. So, you know, I don't have any personal experience with that, but I can tell you that there are things that happen that make it go berserk. And I just want to say, as a developer, people assume that when something's set up, it'll just work always and forever. And that anybody who's run one of these systems for more than, say, a week realizes that things break, feeds stop feeding, inventory stops syncing. You know, it's like, what's going on here? And then you know, the marketing manager's head starts to go red. And everyone, what's going on here? So I just wanted to say these systems are not foolproof.
Yeah.
But I completely agree that with Paul's point about whatever the marketplace sees, that's got to be the point of truth. There's going to be some data that doesn't reconcile. I've actually seen this where you look at Facebook and you look at Google Analytics tag manager tracking. You go, well, they don't agree. I mean, so why is it off by like 15%? What's going on there? And I don't know. Depends on the specific instance, but so that's as much as I can contribute to that point there.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Eric, for that. Dave, I'm actually going to move to you next. So obviously, you know, as we agreed in your previous story, that measurement is obviously going to be beneficial. We need to measure as much as we can, but you should be measuring against the right data. Okay, if you have one system, one channel, things are easy. But as Eric correctly pointed out, that things break, and then your data is not going to be reliable. Okay. So have you seen any scenarios where you have had some sort of, you know, discrepancies in data, or, you know, there was a real issue of reconciliation, and what underlying factors that you have used or the variables that you have used to reconcile data across the systems?
Perfect. Thanks, Sam. big thing that we usually run into is disagreement between like Google Analytics session data and what's collected in, say, a HubSpot or inside of a different measurement tool. That usually comes down to the way sessions are measured. You know, for some tools, they measure a session as a visit over a certain time period. And so if you wind up having someone that goes to your website, leaves, and then comes back, that would count as two sessions. However, sometimes if it happens within a certain time frame, it only counts as one session, right? So you have to take that into account. And I want to take this time to start kind of warning off my manufacturing friends from one of the most insidious and terrible and evil and awful, and I'll insert a bunch of four-letter words in here as well if I get a chance, ways that other people, other marketing agencies, tend to try to prey on unsuspecting manufacturers or people that just don't get marketing. They'll run reports or checks and say, man, you're not ranking on at all on any keywords. Or, you know, I've noticed that your bounce rate is massive and your marketing agency sucks and we need to talk. And you can make data say anything you want, which is why it's important to be able to trust the people that you're working with. And as agencies or as marketers, it's important to be as transparent as possible and tell people how the data comes to fruition and what's being measured. Because the more your client, the more your partner, the more your customer understands where the data is coming from, the more they're set with tools to just kind of write off all of the parasites that are trying to cling to the side of your ship as you're moving along in this sales ocean. So I guess I'm a little off track because I saw my soapbox and I climbed right up on it. But you know, it's really important to note that unless there's a lot of transparency and unless you work with a partner that's very clear to share, here's what the data is, yes, but here's what it means and here's what it doesn't mean, you're not going to be set up to almost inoculate yourself against stupidity, right? And there's always dumb things happening on the outside. So whether that's two systems that aren't talking the same way, whether it's something as silly as, you know, a marketing agency or a web development agency that developed a website but forgot to unhook the no track, no follow that you place on Google whenever you're developing a website, right? So we come to a client and they're like, you know, we don't have any traffic. Ever since we launched our new website 3 years ago, we haven't been getting any SEO results. We look at it, 1 minute search in Search Console, and it tells them, well, you've essentially hung up a closed for business sign on the front of your website. So that's why nobody's visiting. And 15 seconds later, we've got that fixed. And all of a sudden, we're getting a lot of data back in. We're getting a lot of traffic. So working with the right people is important. Transparency is important. And understanding where the numbers come from and how to interpret those numbers is also important.
Yeah, I completely agree. And education and transparency is going to be one of the factors in any data feed. You really need to know what data is really telling you. And as a consultant for anybody, I guess, you know, their job is going to be to really coach their customers as opposed to saying, this is where the money is or this is where the business is. Obviously, every single data feed is going to have a story. And you need to work hard to correlate that and to be able to create a compelling funnel that is going to drive the real business results. So Kira, I'm actually going to move to you next in terms of, have you seen any specific challenges in terms of correlation, reconciliation of different data feeds? Do you have any specific examples that you might be able to share?
Sure. So even at the level of data that you can source or buy, in organizations that are more sophisticated and maybe beefed up with the dollars, this problem has been emerging. So you buy data or collect data from different sources, from different providers, and you have the mobile phone number and it's different per provider. So what do you do around that? How do your sales know how to reach out? So there are even different tools that help clean that data according to different rules. So that's a sophisticated case. So I believe that every step, micro step of working with data might be complicated if you like choose it to be such. I, as you know, always like to simplify, definitely. So as a marketing person, I always tie everything back to the CRM or contact or lead management software, whatever you are using, even if it's an Excel, to make sure that something works. Because absolutely, organic traffic, as Dave mentioned, and absolutely agree that's important, is good, but whether it converts, that's what we are measuring. So first of all, I think, like, again, as we covered already, Google Analytics, if set up right, is a good way to start. But I would always go back and make a real life check with the CRM or however you track actual sales. And if that requires sitting with the sales team weekly, monthly to just sync on the performance, just do that. B2C business where, or e-commerce business where the sale goes just online and there is no like offline communication is much, much easier. And we covered that already. But again, always, always going back to the sales source of truth, that would be my best tip. And again, every business is different. I don't want to give like generic recommendations, but every business with external help can and should define what elements of data they need for decision making and what in their case is the ultimate source of truth for each specific data piece, and then decide what they want to see and how to make that. That's question number two.
Yeah, amazing. And we all want to make things simple, but depending upon the complexity of the e-commerce organization, the complexity can grow really fast. And then, you know, you really need to figure out, you know, how to manage the analytics and have the centralized intelligence. And if you don't have that, obviously you are going to be feeding wrong information to your marketing managers, and obviously they are going to be making wrong decisions. And that is going to have real impact on your bottom line or the top line. So, okay. So, Paul, I'm actually going to come back to you. So, let's say if I am the marketing manager, I come in the morning, I am looking at my day in the life scenario. Okay. I want to look at a couple of KPIs because dashboard is what I live my life with. I need to know every single KPI. As let's say if you're talking about CFOs, they want to look at things from the financial perspective. They are going to look at, okay, where I should be collecting the cash. From the marketing perspective, it's going to be different, right? So what are some of the KPIs or charts or graphs that they should be considering? Let's say if they are trying to design a centralized layer. So obviously your data sources are going to be your Google Analytics, HubSpot, or wherever you are getting the data from. But what are some of the charts, graphs, and the KPIs that you would consider as part of your centralized analytics platform?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, there are lots of metrics for advertising, right? And certainly if you spend a bit of time on LinkedIn, you see lots of people talk about this, you know, click-through rate, how much you're bidding, impressions, all of that. Sometimes you've got to be careful because I see a lot of those, and this, you know, some of you may disagree. So a lot of these are kind of vanity metrics, right? You can talk, oh, my impressions are up 300%, and that's great, or that. You know, there's so many facets, and a lot of, to your point, you know, earlier, it's almost like some of these results you can manufacture. It may just cost you an arm and a leg. So I think you've got to be really careful. I think as a marketing person, I would hesitate to ask a marketing person to look at the total bottom line because there's so many other things going on, and that really, you know, moves that sort of measurement away from the day job. But certainly the key measurement that I tend to, you know, and that we've built out and that is really visible within our system, you know, across channels and then within campaigns and ad groups and whatever you want to slice it, is what we call TARCOS, right? So the total advertising cost over sales. And, you know, this is, of course, you've got, you know, the cost as a percentage of total advertising sales. But this is really your advertising cost as a proportion of your total total sales. And this is a useful measure because typically companies will set budgets, right, to say, look, you know, our overall, you know, we allocate 7%, you know, a marketing cost. And it has a relation to the sales. So being able to measure that I think is quite useful for a marketer to give you that holistic perspective. It also acknowledges that there's this interplay between organic sales and paid sales, right? And I've seen this on Google as well. You certainly see this on marketplaces. You don't want to incentivize marketers just on, say, paid advertising, because there's an interplay between organic and paid. And at some point, you're just going to be cannibalizing your organic sales. You know, and remember seeing, working with a client 2 years ago, where the agency was waving victory flags and saying, look, you know, organic, you know, our advertising cost is great, pretty low, our metrics are good, our advertising sales have tripled. And then you go down and say, right, what are the keywords that you are winning against and where you're driving your sales? Okay, that's great. Well, actually, those are our top organic keywords, right, that we used to get for free. So we've just substituted organic sales with paid sales. What we used to get for free, we're now paying for it. You know, so I think looking at a total metric in terms of advertising cost over sales is useful.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for those insights. So Eric, I'm actually going to move to you. So let's say today, you are playing the role of the marketer and you are coming in the morning for your job. You know, what are the KPIs and the charts and graphs that you would like to see as a marketer so that you can do your job?
Yeah, it depends on what kind of business you're in, of course. But I would say that if you're in a consumer business and you're engaged in some sort of marketing campaign, say Facebook ads, I would look at click-through rates and bounce rates. Like, okay, so they got to the landing page. What happened after that point? Did they just leave? Or did they go deeper? What part of the ad, what part of the offer, if it's a direct mail or a email marketing campaign, what you can construct emails so that there are various hotspots on the email. Did they click on the picture or did they click on the headline or the product description, or which one of those pieces are more compelling? And when they did that, when they wound up on the product page or the landing page or the category page or the special offer page, which one of those was more compelling and did it turn into sales? I mean, that's just really garden variety of e-com marketing, but it still works though. I love the point about cannibalizing your organic traffic and paying for it. That's not something I'd thought of. That's a good point.
Okay, amazing insights there. Thank you so much, Eric, for that. So Dave, I'm actually going to move to you next. So today you are the marketing manager or the marketing analyst, and you are looking for a bunch of insights so that it can be your job. What are some of the charts and graphs and the KPIs that you would definitely like to have in the dashboard so that you can do your job and your team can do your job?
I think the extra points that we haven't talked about in at least directly is conversions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we're measuring, yes, we want traffic. Yes, we want clicks. But where the rubber hits the road, where the money hits the wall, is when people actually convert, when they buy.
Yeah.
That's why it's incredibly important to tie together your Google Analytics with your Google Ads, right? To know not only how well are my ads converting, but what happens after I get there. And it's not hard to modify those results or to add to those Google Analytics reports to add conversions through the buyer's journey or through the completion stages. But once you do, you can actually see, yes, this is working or this isn't working. And yeah, all of the other stuff that goes into marketing and driving traffic, driving eyeballs is still important. But if nothing's converting, it really doesn't matter. And so that's where we usually try and pull those right into our first reports, especially when you're talking about manufacturing that has an e-commerce perspective to it. You want to make sure people are not only getting to the cart page or yeah, getting to the product and then trying to complete, but that they're actually completing, that you don't have a massive amount of abandoned carts. And checking that, because there might be something in your buyer process that's stopping people. Maybe you're asking too many questions. Maybe you're forcing people to join your club or whatever, instead of just letting them buy the dang thing and using the email that's going to be generated out of that purchase to do the rest of that customer follow-up. So how can you smooth out the bumps in your buyer's journey? How can you reduce friction that's stopping people from purchasing and get them all the way there? And it all comes down to, you know, really gauging. And I think Paul said this really well. You need to really figure out where you're making your money. And that's your level set. You know, what's my cost? And dang it, now I'm hungry because Paul was talking about tacos. Your total advertising cost over sales, right? So I'm spending this much, making this many sales. That's what you really need to lever against. And it's not just advertising, right? So it is SEO. And for some reason, businesses are still stuck on trying to advertise against their own brand. You know, if you have a web domain that people would type anyway to get to your website, why on earth are you spending any money on advertising against your domain? You know, it's just throwing money away. So anything that you organically rank for, you really shouldn't be spending a lot of effort on, unless it's A/B testing the efficacy of a particular campaign, right? So is using our brand first or our brand last in a sales message going to result in more conversions? You know, where are people hitting the friction? Where are they jumping out of our sales journey? Where are they jumping out of our process? That's what you can use that kind of advertising for. But again, you really need to be measuring where people are stopping their buyer's journey, where people are jumping out, and then optimizing for that. And that all comes down to what you're spending and what you're bringing in for what you're spending across all marketing, across SEO, across email marketing, across everything else that you're doing. And this is where having a good CMO, chief marketing officer, or CRO, chief revenue officer, can be incredibly helpful. I have partners, and we have, you know, a few dozen marketing clients that we're working with all the time. The ones that are most successful are the ones that have someone asking those questions at a C-suite level to say, is this really doing what we want it to? Because as a marketing company, we can drive leads, we can drive conversions, but unless our team has optimized for closing those sales, it's kind of water under the bridge. It's just money that goes out and that never comes back. And I'll give you one more example. We had a fantastic client. We had built their website. We were doing some marketing programs and driving tons of what they told us were their sales leads. So their best leads, you know, exactly what they needed. We were giving them a couple hundred a month. They needed that much. And so we were meeting that and actually exceeding it by about 20%. 2 months later, the president of the company calls me and said, this sucks. Can't stand it. We're losing money hand over fist. I don't know why we're doing anything with marketing. This is awful. Like, whoa, wait. You told us you wanted this many kind of person visiting your website and completing, and they're completing. What are you doing with those leads that we're giving you? And he said, well, we're mailing them a brochure. Right? Nothing. You may as well just let those leads on fire. So unless you've got an entire measurement of everything that you're doing, you're lighting money on fire.
Okay. Amazing story there, by the way. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. Okay, Kira, I'm actually going to move to you. So obviously you are the marketer yourself. But today the only difference is going to be you are going to be marketer for a manufacturer or a product-centric company, right? So let's say if you are doing the marketing for them and you are coming in the morning and you are looking at a bunch of KPIs, charts and graphs, what are some of the KPIs that you would like to see on your dashboard?
Again, every business is different. And I would choose maybe main three KPIs to simplify again. So for marketers, I believe that revenues is how we are measured. This is how marketing is measured. Revenue that we bring. So I'm not saying anything else, just revenue. I don't care how much operational costs we have. I don't have influence on that. I only have influence on what is sold via marketing effort, and that's revenue. That's number one. Second, we covered that. This is acquisition costs. How much it costs us to bring one sale. And the third one, which is often neglected, is the lifetime value. Does the customer buy one with you? Do they stay for longer? And that might be a bit more sophisticated calculation, but this needs to be done. And that success needs to be attributed to marketing. And this is another like huge conversation attribution, marketing influenced sales. Like it's, I wouldn't even go there, especially with product driven company. So that's what I'd say. Acquisition cost per client, revenue driven by marketing, obviously, and the lifetime value, which can be not only from acquisition, but from the whole time that the customer stays with us. And I would, let me slightly disagree with Dave on cannibalization, on the paid traffic on your brand name or your domain and organic traffic. I am doing marketing for manufacturers, and I don't know how, but there is so much competition in paid ads on nearly any brand name. Google allows that within specific limitation. But like, I mean, your site, if you are not doing paid advertising on your name, gets pushed so much down the page that people don't get there. So leave alone that your competition is spending bucks, just they waste that money. People click but don't buy anything. But for you, because you are the brand, those clicks will be really, really cheap and your ads will be high quality. And agree with Dave that you need to test it out. And if you don't have any paid competition on your brand name, I don't even know whether it's good or bad. Maybe it's better that people bid on your name, that you are so important. So test it out.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Kira. And I am going to give Dave quick opportunity if you, Dave is going to have any quick counter based on the disagreement, just for the clarification.
You know, it's fun. And I do agree with Kira that if you're seeing tons of competition, that it can be valuable to enter the fray. However, you can also race to the bottom. And so I talked to my friends at Google about this once, and they said, you know, what's interesting is the data that we're seeing on ads on brands, that the conversion is always so low on those brands. And if you think about it, if competitor X is advertising against competitor Y, if you are clicking on competitor Y expecting competitor X, what you're doing is upsetting the person that was clicking on that ad. And then they're just going to Google the original competitor X anyway. And that's kind of fun because they're lighting their money on fire trying to get to you. So, you know, it's really, and you need to test and measure this. And, you know, the point is incredibly well taken, you know, Kira, if you need to look at all of the inputs. And if they've figured something out and they are siphoning some traffic off of you or siphoning some money off of you, then it's worthy of looking at it. But a lot of times people get caught up in this and they're just like, oh, well, we need to advertise against all our competitors. If somebody's Googling for a competitor, they get your page, they're going to backclick and go back to their competitor because that's what they're looking for. So don't light your money on fire that way either.
Okay, amazing, guys. Thank you so much. And we can take only super short closing advice. And I am going to ask you guys to just keep it at one sentence. Okay, Max, that's all. Paul, your super short closing advice in one sentence, please.
Sorry, I missed your question slightly, Sam, but I'm just going to give you my one nugget for the season. It's Q4. Yep. You know, given that most manufacturers and e-commerce is really struggling to get enough stock into the system for Cyber Weekend, Christmas peak trading and all that, I would say think very carefully about where and how you spend money in terms of marketing, because you may need to spend as much as you've done in the past, or you may not have enough inventory to support it either. So, you know, focus on the overall profit picture and really think a bit differently about advertising spend this year than maybe the year before.
Right. Awesome. Thank you so much. Eric, just super short one sentence.
I would say if you're seeing some anomalies in your data, make sure that your feeds are still working and that your inventory is synced and that things are really in place.
Okay. Amazing. Dave, 3 or 4 words, please. Closing advice.
I'm going to give you 8. Work with a pro. Give us a call.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate it. Kira, your short closing advice.
Agree with Dave. If you're stuck with your data, you know to raise the flag, ask Sam, he will refer you to the right person. Don't stay in analysis paralysis.
Thank you so much for your insights and your time.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Eric Lenman, head over to earthlinginteractive.com. It's earthlinginteractive.com. If you want to learn more about Paul Sonneveldt, head over to merchantspring.io. It's merchantspring.io. If you want to learn more about Dave Meyer, head over to busyweb.com. It's BIZZYWEB.com. If you want to learn more about Kira, head over to customization.ca. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with John Reedman, who discusses how to compare and measure marketing channels to plan your marketing budget. Also, the interview with Paul Sonneveldt, who discusses the marketplace expansion strategy for e-commerce sellers or manufacturers aspiring to expand their footprint through digital commerce. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.